The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the fifth episode of the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And today on the podcast, we're going to talk about Hannibal Lecter and Silence of the Lambs because, well, Halloween's around the corner and wine is involved in not one, but two of the movies. Plus, I'll give you another wine tip about how to pretend you are a wine expert, even if you know nothing about wine. And the interview today with Sportsnet reporter Sean McKenzie. And if you're a sports fan, that name will probably sound familiar. Father Bob McKenzie is one of the most famous people in the sports media landscape in Canada, behind only Don Cherry and Ron McLean. But what I liked about this interview is that Sean is the sort of person that I think in terms of wine profile, a lot of you are as well. He is a high-end enthusiast. He's a guy who loves wine, comes by it honestly, and more importantly, wants to learn more about wine. And is excited to. And I think that kind of reflects his passion and personality for wine. I think probably reflects what a lot of people that are listening to this. They know a bunch, they want to know more, and they're just curious about learning as much as they can, which is really not far off for me. The way I started to get into wine is very similar to how Sean did. So a really fun conversation with him, and that'll be in about 15 minutes time. But where I want to start is over the weekend, shout out to the National Club. They did a tour in the National Club here in Toronto around King and Bay Street, private club, but trust me, in terms of the snoot factor, a lot lower for here than a lot of the other private clubs within Toronto GTA area. And we did a tour of Niagara. And I want to give a couple shout outs to a couple wineries and give some recommendations. We started the day at a place called Peninsula Ridge Winery. And first, you got to go there and just Google it, Peninsula Ridge Winery. Gorgeous. You overlooking the lake, in St. Catharines area, you can see the city of Toronto. And three wines I want to talk about quickly. The 2017 AJ Lep Sauvignon Blanc, just under $20. And this wine, the nose, very powerful Sauvignon Blanc. It definitely has that Cloudy Bay, New England, the New England Patriots Bills game is on right now. So that's where that came from. New Zealand feel to it. Just powerful nose, the boysenberry, grapefruit, lychee, just all that sort of stuff. What I liked about this wine was the acidity just throughout. It really tied the wine together, just like the dude's rug in The Big Lebowski. But it's really bracing, excellent acidity. If you like Sauvignon Blanc, if you like New England Sauvignon Blanc, this is a really good wine. The wine they really probably hang their hat on is their 2016 Reserve Syrah. And this goes for about $30. And this is not a pepper monster. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But this is a wine where, you know, when you think Syrah, you do think that black pepper. This is a little more lighter, a little more white pepper, really expressive red berry, blue fruit, and a really nice linger on the end. Excellent example of a New World Syrah. And by the way, speaking of New World Syrah, that's what we're going to try a little bit later on with Sean McKenzie, a wine called from the Klein Estates, from Carneros, a really good cool climate area in California, but that's in a little bit. The final wine from Peninsula Ridge, 2016 Reserve Meritage. And I'm fairly sure this, I'm trying to remember the blend, but I'm fairly sure it was like a 60% Merlot, and then most of the rest of it was Cabernet Sauvignon. Most of the rest of it. That doesn't sound like good English. But you can Google it. You can find out the blend, 2016 Reserve Meritage. So three wines from Peninsula Ridge Winery I'd recommend. Next, we went to Henria Pelham. And Henria Pelham, for a lot of people, they probably just think about the under $20 wines, because Henria Pelham makes a lot of wine. You can find them pretty much everywhere throughout Canada. Well, I want to talk about two real quick. Their 2017 Riesling Spec Family Reserve. Damn, powerful Riesling. Petrol, orange peel, great mid-palate. And what I found interesting was we were talking to one of the owners, Daniel Speck, and he talked about the sub-appellation of this area where this wine's from. It's more of a heavy clay soil from an area called Short Hills Bench. And what I appreciated here was, and it's something we got to get into and something I got to talk about as this podcast goes on, is that we need to do a better job of classifying the smaller appellations all throughout Niagara, Prince Edward County. I think that really gives a higher level of legitimacy to Ontario wine when you can prove that, yes, this certain area can make better wine than this area. This area brings these sort of characteristics where it's different than here. That sort of way to differentiate between wines and between areas, it just creates a higher, I don't want to call it glamour, but it just really helps to justify why you're paying what you're paying for the wines when they get more expensive. Because when we think about Ontario wines, it's very ubiquitous. It's all Ontario wine is all the same. It's not. It's very different. So we need to start speaking about it in this way. The other one was their Family Reserve Pinot Noir. It goes about $35. Very young, 2017, but drinkable. I mean, you can throw it away for a decade, but tight raspberry, metallic cherry. Give it a shot. Really good wine. Then the third place, and I'm going to get into this place more down the road, Two Sisters, which won best, I think it was Small Wine Ontario Winery. It's won a bunch of awards. It is giant. It is opulent. Damn. And they spend a lot of money on their wines. And it reflects it. You know, these wines are, these are pricey wines. You're going to be spending $30-$40, which is not what you're probably used to spending. But, you know, the hand-picked, small yield, these wines see a lot of time in oak and a lot of new oak and new French oak. Oak's expensive. It really is. So it's another wine, the final winery we went to. I would recommend it. By the way, we went to it for lunch. Victor Newman. Yes, Victor Newman from Young and the Restless was sitting in the corner having lunch. He even tweeted about it afterwards. 2016 Riesling, which, you know, 92 points on Wine Align and won the gold medal for the National Wine Awards of Canada. And it deserves it. This is another big, powerful, grapefruit-filled apple, peach, Riesling. A lot of stone fruit, acidity, a very clean, beautiful wine. I highly recommend it. And the other one I want to talk about is your 2012 Estate Red Reserve. And what I appreciate about this is this wine was $24.95. $25 for Two Sisters is about as cheap a wine as you're going to find. It still spends about 40 months in oak, and it's $25. That's remarkable. That is remarkable to have a wine that doesn't cost, that costs under 30, that spends that much time. It's a Merlot-based Bordeaux blend with some Cab Sauv and some Cab Franc. We also got to barrel taste some of the younger Cab Francs that are going to be coming out. But another winery I would highly recommend. So Peninsula Ridge Winery, Henry of Pelham, and Two Sisters are three ones. A lot of good portfolio. I would highly recommend, especially for people that are just getting into wine. I want to learn a little bit more about Niagara wine. So my wine tip for today, if you're at a restaurant and you're the one who orders the bottle, when the waiter, waitress, server, somm, whoever it is who's bringing you the wine, you know, they'll pour you a little, you know, little sip to try to make sure the wine is good. If you want to fake it with the group of people you're with and you really know wine, here's an easy tip. Don't drink it. Just have a quick smell. Just pour, little smell, and go, oh, yeah, it's perfect. Thank you. And I mean right away, sniff, wait a beat, you know, crinkle up your forehead like you're thinking super hard, and then say, thank you. This wine is perfect. I love it. If you do that, people are going to be impressed. They're like, damn, this person knows so much about wine, they don't even need to taste it. They don't need to taste it at all. They just smell, and they immediately know, and they can immediately tell if the wine is good or bad. Now, the only problem is that if the wine is off, well, you're kind of screwed. But again, it's the small price to pay to be able to fake it like you are a wine expert. That's if you need to, if you want to. So just another little easy tip. So as I'm recording this part, it's October 29th. It's Monday. This will probably be released Tuesday morning. I wanted to talk a little bit about horror movies. And I actually Googled horror and wine. And there wasn't a lot that came up. But as we all remember in Silence of the Lambs, we all remember the wine that Hannibal Lecter was drinking as he ate the doctor when he ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti. Then he gives the, you know, that weird rat sound. I'm not gonna try to recreate it. I just did for a moment and it sounded horrible. So we all know that was Chianti. But if you saw a bunch of years later when he reprised his role for the movie Hannibal, at the end of the movie, and you can use this, admittedly, this wine sort of piece of knowledge is, it's not going to help you, really. There's not too many people. There's going to be an intersection between those that love the movie Hannibal. It's actually kind of underrated. It's a pretty good movie. And also loves wine. But in case they do, at the end of the movie, if you remember, he's sitting and he's got his own special meal and he's on the airplane. And spoiler alert, he survives. I'm sorry if you haven't seen Hannibal. And he's got brains. You know, he's got a little dish of brains. I won't tell you whose brains they are. They're Ray Liotta's. There's another spoiler. And he's got a bottle of wine. And I always wondered, what is that bottle? And I could tell that it was Bordeaux. Well, it is a Left Bank Bordeaux Chateau Filon Seguier, 1996. This is a Left Bank wine. It's not a growth. It's not like first, second, third, fourth, and fifth growth wine. But it is a very high-end, very well-made Bordeaux wine, Left Bank from the Saint-Estèphe area. And for Left Bank Bordeaux, it does actually, usually the blend is a little bit more Merlot than Cabernet. But anyway, when someone says, oh yeah, Hannibal Lecter loves Chianti, you can go to that person and go, oh yeah, he also loves, you know, then just throw it out there. And the plane scene, 96, Chateau Filon Seguier is what he was drinking. All right. So again, I hope everyone has been enjoying the podcast. If you have any thoughts, please, you can tweet me at mcause56. I'd love to hear your thoughts, what you like, what you don't like. I'll probably eventually be putting out a couple more shorter podcasts where it's just me yammering on about some wines I liked or didn't like. I was at the Italian Trade Commission. They were doing a huge tasting today downtown Toronto at Roy Thompson Hall, and that was fantastic. Really just great expression. Some funky wines, too, from Sicily. So I'll probably chat about that at some point. I'm just still making my notes for that. So the upcoming podcast in the near future, Jay Onwright, Jules Garten, who is really well known in the Toronto wine scene. So we've got a lot of good stuff. And if you like the podcast, please rate, review it, tell your friends. You can find me on Stitcher, on Audio Boom, and on iTunes. And if you don't like the podcast and you're still listening, that's kind of odd. I don't know why you are, but thank you. Thank you for clicking and enjoying this. But without further ado, from Sportsnet hockey reporter, huge wine enthusiast, great stories about wine, his dad, Bob McKenzie, it is Sean McKenzie. Enjoy, everybody, and happy hunting. I am with Sean McKenzie, reporter for Sportsnet, also a huge wine guy. And this is kind of what I want to do, is try to have a mix of, you know, we have the master somms like Bruce and Emily, and we're going to be having Jules Garten, who's also at advanced level and owns part of a restaurant in downtown Toronto, and want to have a mix. But I also want to have just people with, or just really passionate about wine. And Sean is, his father, Bob McKenzie, obviously is. Sean and I, we would tweet back and forth about wine. And then when I was starting this, Sean reached out and I was like, yeah, I would love to have you on. So Sean, thanks so much for doing it.
No, it's great. We were Instagram and Twitter friends. And then I saw the idea for the podcast and I thought, that sounds interesting. I want to talk wine and interesting stuff. So let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just, you know, for yourself, you want to not always talk sports. Not that we're not going to, because we are. And right now we have the Leafs and the Winnipeg Jets game going on.
It's always on in the background to some extent. There's always some kind of sports involved. But
yeah,
it's nice to, like, I love drinking beer with my buddies and all that. But being a younger guy that loves wine, it's a little bit different because you can't really, you can't go out with your buddies and start digging into regions and what's great about this wine. Or even on the road with, you know, you go out for dinner and you order wine, but, you know, the guys that I drink wine with, you can't often be like, well, this is a beautiful on the palate, or it's a long finish, because they look at you like, just shut up and drink the bottle.
Well, the thing is, it's now different for me. Everyone expects it. Like, I ran into Gord Miller today, and he's like, Matt, I just bought a case, or I bought some Barolo, and I thought about you. And I'm like, well, hey, man, tell me what it is. I want to know. And then I was interviewing Gino Retta, and, you know, he was asking about good wines for $20. So it's easier for me to. You're a little bit younger. You don't have the full stink of wine on you
yet. No, and you have, obviously, you know, you've done classes and certifications. So for me, when I talk wine, it's like, when I feel like, you know, I know you have it in your Twitter handle. When you see that, you're like, okay, this guy really knows wine.
Yeah.
It's like, I start talking about wine. There's like, do you really know it? Or do you just, you know, go on Google or if you watch that Saw movie on Netflix? But like, do you feel pressure when people ask for wine recommend? Because like, you know, you could recommend a Barolo to someone that likes Napa Cab and they could be like, what the hell did you recommend? Like, this is crazy. Like,
see, that would be my fault. If someone just only drinks Napa Cab, then what I would probably do is I'd want to sort of transition them. You know, actually, I might go like some South African.
Okay.
And then slowly.
In between almost.
Yeah. And then slowly get them over to France.
Like when I first, like when I, I've been into wine for a long time, but like when I started traveling in the last couple of years, I've been more into it, you know, to a different level. And when I first started traveling, I'd look at the wine menu and be like, I'm going to order what I want.
Yeah.
Because people knew I loved wine, so they'd always hand me the wine menu and say, oh, you deal with it.
And how much pressure did you feel at the table?
Crazy pressure, because I'm usually like one of the younger guys, and people are like, okay, so you think, and then I ordered, like, I was ordering, like, you know, for, we went to this crazy steakhouse in Philadelphia, I believe it was, and the guys I was with loved Napa Cab, but I was just being selfish, and I'm like, well, there was a Bandole on there, there was a Cornas, and I think I ended up getting the Cornas.
Yeah.
And one guy at the table who likes Napa Cab was like, this is really cool, this is strange. The other guy kind of looked at it, I was like, it's thin, it's light. Like, what, like, what is, and like, that's fine. But then I felt like, you know what, maybe I should start ordering for more for the table and less for me.
Yeah, but then, like, by the way, how old, I don't know this, how old are you?
I'm 29.
Okay, see, I'm going to talk about the general, this is a wild generalization for men. Here's how it normally works for men for wine. They start with red, they drink almost no white. And they drink mostly New World, and you know, Australia, and definitely Napa Cab. But then if you get into wine, you start drinking almost as much white as you do red, and eventually you're hanging out in the old world. Like you mentioned, when you're looking at the list, you didn't even go Bordeaux, you went Bandole.
Yeah.
You know, you went Bandole in Cornas. So yeah, for people listening to this, it's not just, oh, well, Matt and Sean both work in the industry. I mean, you know, you were showing me pictures of wine you're getting, and you're talking about your love of Cornas. You are in, especially at 29, you are in the exception. You're not the norm for wine.
Yeah, and that's people. I kind of recommend stuff, and people look and go like, "Oh, what is this? Where is it from?" And they can't really grasp. Like, and then even like my dad for the longest time loved and still loves Napa Cab.
Yeah,
but,
loves the show.
He is, and I don't want to quote him on this. But
if you're going to misquote your dad, let it be about Nylander.
I'm not going there. I'm not getting myself in trouble with the any quoting of Nylander, but. I asked him, I said, like, would you, and like, in the last year or so, every time we go, every time I go up to the cottage, at least, or even Christmas, I'll bring something a little weird.
Yeah.
And even as I discover it, like, it's not like I'm saying I've been drinking Bandole for 5 years. It's like, I'll pick it up and go, well, this looks cool. Let's try it. And he'll try it. And he's very much straight away from the Napa stuff. Like, he will open up a bottle of Napa. And even like, you know, we opened up, I think it was a Shiraz from Barossa Valley or something like that, and he kind of, this is very vanilla, very like, and I said, yeah, like, but a year ago you would have been this, but now he loves Brunello,
yeah,
and he's drinking, he loves Super Tuscans, and he's drinking stuff like Rosso di Montalcino and like really kind of more obscure stuff. But the kind of the generalization or stereotype you said about younger is pretty true, because I don't drink white.
Eventually you will.
Yeah.
Eventually, because the thing is about being like, I don't like to use the word expert, but it's just like an enthusiast, someone who knows their wine really well, someone who's comfortable with a wine list or the LCBO or wherever you go. And I'm not talking about people that study for Debbie said, of course, Quartermaster Somme is, are you curious? That is, and for anyone listening who's new into wine, and what I always tell people, don't be intimidated by it. It's just because it's fun. There's so much to learn, but be curious. Write down what you like. Like, try Bandole. And if you like it, you know, that's a Mourvèdre-based wine, small appellation in Provence. Gorgeous wine, meaty, savory, you know, big, but not like overwhelming. But eventually you'll start drinking white because you're curious.
Well, and that's, and for me, I think wine is great because I'm genuinely curious about everything. And I think that's what got me into wine was, like, I love Googling shit.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, I don't care if it's a hotel I'm going to or a restaurant, like, anything that I'm going to do, I want to know about it.
Yeah.
So, like, every time I drink a bottle of wine, I just love digging in online and being like, okay, yeah, so who made it? Was that a good year? What? And then like, then I just like, I'm just like every millennial basically online, whether it's YouTube or anything, I'll just go down the rabbit hole of like, okay, now I've looked at this region and, you know, 2009 was a great year for that, but what year was shit? And then I'll start, and the next, you know, 2 hours have gone by and I've learned, you know, a fair amount of knowledge about us.
That's perfect. That's how you, I said in my first podcast, first thing I did, like when I started getting wine, I tried a Zinfandel from California from an area called Lodi. I didn't know anything about Lodi. Then I looked it up. I'm like, oh, actually Lodi is famous for their Zinfandel. Yeah.
And then you find out there's some guy there that makes the bet. And there's some cool history story where he's got a vineyard. There's just so much that you can go deeper and deeper into. Where for me, that's kind of where it got addicting, where I just like to Google stuff.
Yeah. And by the way, just so everyone knows, we're not saying anything negative about Napa Cab. Napa Cab is great. It's just people get stuck there and they don't sometimes want to venture out.
And I think some of the, actually probably two of the best bottles I've ever had are Napa Cab.
Yeah.
And I am a person that would say I would go to the LCBO and maybe one out of 100 times would buy Napa Cab.
Yeah.
And two of the best bottles are Napa Cab. So I still love it, but I just love trying different stuff because I find more so because I shop for value a lot of the time. And Napa Cab, I find you get a $30 or $40 bottle. And I find, and maybe this, like, I'm not speaking from crazy amounts of experience or knowledge, but I find for me to get a Napa Cab I like, it's the more expensive ones.
Yeah, it's what's going to be because just the simple thing, geography. Napa is expensive. The real estate per hectare, I mean, it's not at Champagne or, you know, Growth Bordeaux or even like Grand Premier Cru, Premier Cru Burgundy, absolutely it is. But it actually, maybe even some Grand Cru, depends where you are, like Tau Cologne and some of the places that Mondavi discovered. But it's expensive.
Yep.
And California is not there's a lot of taxes in California. It's not cheap to produce anything. Yep. That's part of it. And also, Cabernet is an expensive grape. And also, the word Napa Cab, that's a brand.
Yeah.
Just like,
absolutely.
Well, just like Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
It's a brand.
You're going to pay extra for something that has that. And I find a little bit like Bordeaux too.
Yeah.
If I really want to splurge and get a bottle, like $100, like really kind of go crazy on something.
Yeah.
I'll look at Bordeaux, but if I'm going value, I don't think I'll go there because there's so many and I don't have enough knowledge to pick the right bottle for $25 from Bordeaux that might be good.
You got it. That one needs a lot of digging. Also, France, you know, they don't make it easy.
No, they don't
make it easy. It's not a tourist friendly or a service friendly country. Look at the history of the wine. If you see the word Cornasse, you know that means Syrah. You know where that's from.
Yep.
But if someone who just wants to learn about wine sees Cornasse, they're like, there's nowhere on the label that says where it is or what the grape is.
Or even what grape.
Yeah.
If you're getting a Napa, it's going to be Cabernet and you're going to probably like it because that's what you like. But when you see like Chateau Neuf du Pape and you don't know much about wine, you're like, what the hell does that mean?
Yeah. There was in a Beastie Boys song.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I forget which one, but they actually use Chateau Neuf du Pape in a song.
It's funny, and I love Chateau. And I find the thing that I love the most about learning more about wine is how it's saving me money.
Yeah.
Because I know I love Chateau Neuf du Pape, but then I dig into, okay, what's in Chateau Neuf du Pape and what's that region? And then all of a sudden, oh, okay, Gigondas. Mm-hmm. I never tried that, and it's half the price.
Yep.
And I went and got it, and it was awesome. Or I love Cornasse. Okay, San Josef.
Yep.
That's really good, too.
There you go.
And it was actually funny. I didn't even like wine, but first year university or college, I should say, I took a Wines of the World class. I was 19 and there was,
did you take it because you thought it was a bird course?
I did.
Yeah.
My brother was playing college hockey at St. Lawrence at the time.
Yeah.
And he was going into his third year maybe. And I was sitting with my electives and I'm looking, I was going to take pop culture. And I'm going, it's like movies, it's music. And he goes, no, what the hell? Don't do that. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, I am known at St. Lawrence as the expert of picking the easy classes. Like guys in the team apparently went to him and said, okay, you know, he's been through the ringer. He knew what it was like. So I go, okay, take the list. And he's looking at it. He goes, there, Wines of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I'm 19. I don't know anything about wine. He's like, just take it. So, okay, I trust you.
Yeah.
And then it was a teacher who, heavy French accent, mm-hmm. was the most passionate guy I've ever met about wine. And I loved it from that moment. And his one piece of advice
was I was going to ask you, that's your origin story?
Yes, and there's a, gap between there. But his advice was, if you see a Chateauneuf du Pape or you see a bottle of Ridge, buy it. Mm-hmm. And he said, I don't care where it is, what the price is, just buy it. And I still kind of stick to that advice. Really? I still love those too.
Yeah, yeah. Ridge is a great producer. One of the ones that they'll, every now and then they'll do like a Zinfandel blend, which is weird because I don't usually drink a lot of that.
But I find their, like even their Zinfandel, some of their cabs too aren't over the top.
Yeah.
I find it's a little more
that's
old,
what you want.
Old world, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, so you said there's a gap.
Yeah.
So you took the course. And by the way, I didn't get into wine when I was like in my mid, it wasn't until I was really close to your age where I really started to learn about it and just to dig into it. But you said there was a gap. What happened?
So I went to this course and it was actually, there actually is a funny story and my parents still laugh about this all the time because, so first day, and like this guy was as French gets. And he was passionate. He was opinionated and he wasn't afraid to call you out.
Yeah.
So the first day in class, and there's like, you know, 50 kids in this class and we're all sitting around and he goes, okay, go around. I'm not gonna do his accent because it was heavy. He said, name the last wine you drank. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting there going, oh crap. Like I've had sips of wine recently, like just, but I go, okay, I got it. And I'm kind of, he's going around the room and kids are going like their name and just, and he, every, after everything he's going, shit, crap.
Oh,
and,
really?
And kids are like kind of taken aback.
So, oh no.
So I'm here.
They're saying some new world Pinot.
Oh, and like, you know, baby duck, all this kind of stuff. Like they, you know, wild vine, the strawberry stuff. Yeah, and so he's sitting there and
it's not wrong.
It gets to me and I'm all cocky here. I'm like, well, like, you know, if my parents drink this, like, you know, I think of them as they're my parents, right? They're the best.
They know,
you
know what's going on.
They know what's up. Like, you know, they're fairly classy people. And so he's like, you, I'm like, Yellowtail. Thinking like just being naive. And he looks at me and he just like shakes his head and just goes, oh, worst. And then moves on to, and I'm like, oh shit.
Oh
like,
God, damn it.
This. And I'm like, oh, I feel really stupid. So then like we did that class and then every Friday it was awesome. At that time, I didn't even like wine. But every Friday, so you paid like $120 at the start of the class, and there was like five different classes, so there's hundreds and hundreds of kids taking this. So he took the money, and every Friday we did tastings.
Yeah.
But half the kids were there in the same capacity I was just to get through it. And so they didn't stick, like Friday they'd have their sip and go, okay, thanks, I like it. And he was like, if you don't want to be here, just go, I don't care, I'll give you a good grade.
Really?
But I slowly started like wine, so there was four or five of us that sat around, and he was buying like $60, $70 bottles.
That's fantastic.
And we would just, and this was like, class was Friday at 4 p.m.
Yeah.
So finishes at like 5. And so you're getting, you know, you're getting your jag on and heading right to the party. And so we'd sit around and drink all. So that was a great course, and I learned all the basics. I learned all the grape varieties, just stuff that kind of stuck with me always kind of in the back of my head. And then I didn't get back into it. I always liked, like I would go to the LCBO and enjoy buying wine. But again, I was buying, you know, I'd see, like I went through a stretch where, especially early on when I started traveling for work, I'd go with guys to like the Total Wine in Carolina. There's one.
Oh yeah.
And we get per diem. Mm-hmm. So you'd always take like one day's per diem, $75. Or if you're on a 5-day trip, you take two and splurge. And I'd go with a guy named Jason York who loves wine too. And I'd always get like a, you know, you'd buy Camus or cake bread.
Yeah, of course.
One of those big things. Obviously amazing wine. And then so I would drink that as a splurge. But it wasn't until, it would have been 3 or 4 years ago, maybe three, I went to Italy with a girlfriend, now fiance. And I just remember kind of being like, oh, like I'm looking at a wine list and I don't know a thing. We're in Tuscany and like, I'm looking at these regions, I'm looking at these grapes and I'm like, and that bugs me. Like not looking at something and not knowing what's going on kind of bugs me. Like I want to know, I love wine. I want to know why.
You want some sort of semblance of what you're looking at, what it means.
So we'd go in these stores too, these cool Italian little wine caves. And so I saw a Barolo and I'm like, okay, I've heard Barolo's like the king of wine. It's, you know, this big. So I opened it and poured it out and it was that brown color.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you talked about that. And
And
I saw it and I'm like, okay, this is either really cool that the wine's that color or something has gone horribly wrong. So I tasted it and it was really kind of different and unique. And I was like, okay, so that kind of piqued my interest. So that night I was up late kind of just Googling, why is Barolo brown, all this.
Yeah.
And then the next day was our last day. We were in Venice. And we decided to go for kind of a splurge dinner, go all out. And so I just said to the waiter, I said, you know, we want the nicest bottle that you think. I like full-bodied wines. Bring us what you think for, you know, this price range.
Yeah.
Said 80, 90 euros. So we were kind of going all out.
Your final night, you're going for a nice bottle.
And so he just kind of goes, okay. And he came back with a 2010 Col d'Orsia Brunello.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea what Brunello was like, but they decanted it. They went through the whole routine and
yep.
let it sit for half an hour. And, you know, he kind of recommended that. And then I had one sip and was like, I need to know what this is.
Yeah.
Why does this taste so good? And why is this so much different than any other wine I've ever had?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where, from that moment on.
That was the final. Yeah. Okay. It was the class that started it.
Yes.
And then it was in Italy.
It was the class that started it. And then I had a real interest in it, but not enough to necessarily care to kind of Google stuff and watch YouTube videos on it.
There's
and
then a difference I had that. Between it, before when you were just on the road or after that class, it was an enjoyable thing. Now it's something that you want to be part of your life and you want to understand
exactly
why does this taste like this and all that kind of stuff.
Like I said, I knew enough to go, I like this wine, or, you know, I can work through the aisles, but not enough to know that, you know, Cornas is French Syrah or anything like that. It was very elementary until I kind of went, okay, I want to know about this crap. And then I found it really fun. And the fact that wine is now kind of cool and sexy and it's all over Netflix and those Saw movies.
Oh yeah.
Makes it fun too.
And it's so much different now. And you know, very soon when you're with your friends, eventually they'll either come on board or they'll understand it.
Well, yeah, I have a couple buddies, especially one who his brother works for a like a beverage company, so he knows enough and as well as, so when we go out, we kind of start ordering and talking, and then it's like kind of, I don't want to say infectious, but he's kind of like, okay, so what are you talking about? Like, why is this better than that? And then like he kind of gets curious, and from there, as long as there's other people to talk with, it's fun. But sometimes, you know, being my age, and you know, it's not, you don't always get a group of friends who
you're not going to, but it'll change. Like,
of course,
I had, you know, there was a couple friends, and then, you know, that are into it, and then eventually more come on board, and now everyone, you know, like all my friends, so they all love wine to their own degrees.
And I know, like, my dad and my brother love wine too, and my dad is the type of guy where he loves all wine, and he started off, like you said, loved the show and was, the show was the best bottle ever, but he's not the type that if you tell him, like, hey, try this, he won't go like, no, I think California Cab's the best and you're never going to convince me.
Yeah.
And he's open to trying, and like, he still loves California Cab because it's a lot of it's really, really good.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but he also now is like, I love Cornas, and they just went to Italy and they were in Tuscany. And, you know, he was like, okay, where should I go in Brunello? You know, so he brought
home. Gotta go to the mountain.
He brought home, what did you drink the other night? Like an Il Pagione 2005 Brunello, like stuff like that. He had like it's a Casanova di Nero or Nero.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
One of their Cabernets. So he's drinking all this crazy stuff that I'm like, holy crap. He's got like a Val di Cava Brunello, he's telling me. Like
nice.
Stuff that, you know, a year ago he would have been like, what's that?
And
now he loves it.
And that's the fun thing. And especially for people listening that are just getting into wine, you know, you'll be amazed if you get into it, just how different you could be a year from now and just all the different wines and your different experiences. And, you know, I used to love, there are certain wines I used to love. I used to love, there was this big Sonoma Pinot called Costa Brown. I sort of hinted at the end of my last interview with Emily Pierce, the fourth episode for anyone who hasn't heard it, go back. Have a listen. It's fun. And I used to love it. And she would be like, what are you doing? This is not Pinot. And it was really well made, but it was really big, really big. And I remember waking up one day and, you know, decanted a bottle. Not first thing in the morning. I wait till at least 10 a.m.
That's fine. Hey, no judgment here. I have a bar cart here that's
Yeah, you do have stacked, a bar. We're going to talk about your place. I want to talk hockey and a whole bunch of stuff. But I then woke up one day and I realized, oh, wait, this isn't good.
Yep.
And it's not that it's not well, I shouldn't say that. No, it's not that it's not well made. It's just my palate isn't responding to this. If someone said this is a Pinot Syrah blend, well, then I probably would have liked the wine more. So that changed. And it just, you know, that stuff changes over time. Just like at some point, you'll get into white wine.
Of course. Yeah. And I do, like, I love champagne. I've always loved champagne. But, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, most of the time I get to drink champagne is probably when I'm in a booth at a club and someone hands me a bottle.
Yeah.
And it's not so much the champagne where you're sitting around pouring. It's more in an environment that isn't exactly tasting, swirling.
No, you're not sitting there brooding over just the
no.
You're not over the brioche notes
no.
or just the speed of
no,
the bubbles.
No, you're trying to stay stable and
yeah.
probably using the bottle as a,
yeah.
a walking
yeah, yeah,
cane yeah. at one point. But that's besides the point. But I do love champagne. And like, again, it's more so my curiosity, where I'll sometimes come home with a bottle of white. I'm trying to think of, you know, like, it's Burgundy. It's white Burgundy.
Montrachet?
Chardonnay.
Chardonnay.
It's Chardonnay, but what's the region?
Let's see. We can go from Meursault, Chablis, Montrachet.
Chablis. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. I see Chablis, and I go, I recognize that from some of these movies, and so I want to try that. So it's more so out of curiosity, but I get drawn back to red the majority of the time.
I will tell you, you can find a good, not as much Chablis, but further south in Burgundy. A lot of their whites you can eat with, you can drink with a steak.
Okay.
You can absolutely drink with a steak.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about just, you got in, you played hockey, but then at a young age, you suffered a bunch of concussions. Yep. But as your dad wrote about, it wasn't all just hockey. It was just being a boy.
Yeah, I was
running around.
Yeah, I was kind of useless.
We all do.
Yeah, that. First one when I was like 4 on monkey bars, I fell off and hit my head running around the pool.
Yep.
Brother was chasing me.
Of course.
And then there was probably 3 or 4 in hockey, a couple in lacrosse. One on the schoolyard where I kind of banged my head, just kind of fooling around with buddies. So one after the other, and then obviously got to one too many.
Yeah. At what point did you realize, like, this is now the epiphany themed episode of the podcast. At what point did you realize, okay, yeah, I don't need to exactly be my dad, but I want to get into this business. Cause just my dad, Tobacco Sports Hall of Fame, Woodbine Horse Racing Hall of Fame. He'd written a bunch of books, and you know, my dad was friends with Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
I saw that world throughout my life. I'm curious how.
Well, I think you'll probably agree with this. Is from a young age, I saw kind of what it was. Mm-hmm. Where I feel like our business is strange to most people because they don't see any of it.
Yeah.
They see like one tiny percentage if you're on TV or you're on the radio, and they hear it and they go, okay, like, so that's interesting. But then, you know, you tell people I'm a reporter or I'm a host, or, and they say, oh, I don't really know what that is. Like most people go, oh, so you talk on TV.
Yeah.
Technically, yes. But like from a young age, I would travel the World Juniors with my dad, and I would sit on sets and I'd be there for 10 hours a day, and I'd kind of see all that went into it. So when
all the behind the scenes, all the boring minutiae, the lighting, the sound.
Of course, but
did I mention the lighting? How's
Like sound, like just audio checks and screwing up takes and kind of, I would just sit there it's not necessarily wine related, but.
No, this is wine and stuff.
So
this is the stuff part.
No, but like, so my, it was Vancouver World Juniors, the Justin Pogge year. Mm-hmm. And my brother traveled to more World Juniors than I did when we were younger. I usually stayed home. I was a bit of a mama suck, so I didn't want to leave the house at Christmas.
So
my dad and my brother would take off, and I was just a baby, and we'd stay behind. But as I got older, I got more interested. So the 2004, 2005, someone I'm sure out there will correct me on the year, as most people do on Twitter and social media all the time, but whatever, that's besides the point.
Oh, we can do top five tweets, negative tweets you've gotten.
So I was sitting on set all day, and I was probably 14 or 15, and I kind of was thinking, I want to be involved in hockey.
Yeah.
Do I want to be an agent? No, because I'm not smart enough to get a law or business degree. At that time, I didn't know that, though. But so I'm thinking, an agent would be cool, or, you know, and then so maybe I want to do media, or maybe I want to do broadcasting. And that was when the business was still really thriving. I know now there's a bit of a negative light on it, and kids getting in, you know, are having a tougher time to find jobs, but that was when it was still kind of a pretty thriving industry.
Talking like mid-90s?
No.
No, that'd be older.
No, I was going to say, I'm 29 now, so.
The only reason I was going to say that was in.
Would have been 15 years ago.
Yeah, because in 1998, I was at Ryerson. I took the 2-year advanced standing radio and television program, and almost immediately, I got like a scholarship for TSN, but I also got hired at Sportsnet right when they first went on the air. I was one of the first EAs there.
Nice.
And I wasn't great at that job as an EA.
It's not a business where you really go in and be great right away, because no one really knows how to. Like, you can't really prepare for half the crap that gets thrown at you.
Here's an inside joke that only people. Okay, this is so inside. Then we'll get back. I'm the guy that when it was a Minnesota Twins Royals game, that would be the highlight pack.
Yeah,
that
I did so many of those.
Yeah, the only time
I was a TSN story editor for 1 year.
Yeah.
The only time that my pack ran as the lead was when it wasn't the time the guy passed away, because I believe that was a few years later, but when a guy fell from the upper deck.
Yes.
And I remember I was doing a nothing game that wasn't going to make the show.
Yep.
And then I was like, and I started kind of start. I'm like, someone come help me.
Yeah.
And then someone came over, one of their head editors came over, story editors, and just said, get out, I'll do this. And that was the closest I came to doing the big lead pack.
I think it was the one where a player threw a ball.
It was
Hamilton up into the crowd.
That was the bad one. This was one, just some guy was walking down, tripped and rolled and then fell into the mesh and nothing bad happened. I think the Hamilton one was more serious.
Yeah.
I think this was just a kind of a...
But I love the idea. They tapped you on the shoulder.
Yeah, I just kind of rolled my chair and went to the bathroom and took a 10-minute breather.
Yeah, because it was, like I was just saying, I was prosperous. Like, I'm at Ryerson.
Yeah.
And I got a job.
Yeah.
Which does not happen now.
It would have been about 15 years ago or so.
Okay, so early 2000s, like three.
I would have been 15, and I'm almost 30 now. So So, but what the coolest thing was, I was 15, 16, right around the age where you're still a few years away from being able to drink and go out with buddies, but you are hanging out. You're in high school. You're kind of at that age where you're like, this looks fun. And every night, not every night, I don't want to make them sound crazy, but the World Juniors is a lot of those guys. It's, social. It's you're on the road and you're out there for 2 weeks. They'd go to Joey's, or it was Earl's.
Yeah.
And, every night they just go and have a glass of wine and dinner and talk about the show and what went well, what didn't. And so every night I would go.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be out late, just an hour after the game, but I'm looking at them, this is so much fun. This is awesome. These guys are kind of, they're out socializing after work. And so that's kind of when I looked at that and thought, I love hockey. I love the idea of this broadcasting and what goes into it. And then, hey, they get to drink some beers and wine after and talk hockey some more and then stay at this nice hotel.
So, yeah, that ain't
bad. And that's not what the business is, but at certain times it is. And that I still love that part of the business. So that was kind of where I knew I wanted to give it a shot. And then from there, I did a couple. My dad kind of said, coming out of high school, he says, okay, before we send you to school and kind of make the financial commitment, and he knew that it's a hard business to get into, and if you have to kind of have the talent, and if you don't, you don't. It's one of those weird kind of... So he said, do an internship at Rogers.
Yeah.
Through the high school, and let's see if you even like it.
Yeah.
Before we commit to 2 years of such a specific school where there's no other real options, go do 6 months of interning. And I went and did 6 months, and there's a guy named Roger. Donald Beatty was his name at Rogers. And within 2 weeks, he goes, "You want to be on TV?" I go, "Yeah, I'd love to." He goes, "Okay, write me a story. It was a high school golf event. And if you come back and it's good, you're my new sports reporter for 6 months."
Wow.
And I came back and it was decent. Like, it probably was awful, but he loved editing and he loved the camera work and he was such a creative guy. He goes, "I want a new sports reporter. You are my new guy."
That's great.
Every day for 6 months, he let me do a full report that aired. And that was the moment where I was like, I love this.
Yeah.
I'm half decent at it, so let's give it a shot.
The obvious question is, did you feel pressure? Because, for the more the wine people, what you need to know about, if you don't know this, I just assume everyone does, but maybe they don't know, is that Sean's father, Bob.
No, because wine and hockey, as much as they go together, the worlds are very different.
They are very different. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely they are. Sean's dad, Bob McKenzie, he's kind of the most famous sport. Like, I think it's like Don Cherry would be one, then probably Ron McLean, because Ron's there with Bob, with Don. And then after that, that's sort of where your dad, over a million Twitter followers, sort of where he is.
I'd say that's fair.
He's one of the voices of hockey. And I don't know if you're allowed to say that because you're Sportsnet. I'm tangentially, I'm TSN. We're supposed to be enemies. It's kind of a ridiculous thing about our business, but we'll say that for another pod.
We'll give each other dirty looks periodically through the night.
By the way, can we turn this off Sportsnet on the TSN?
I think the Raptors game is on.
That'd be hilarious if your TV actually, TSN
it doesn't go.
TSN was blocked. Yeah. Scott Moore.
This is a Rogers house. There's no speaking of that network.
Was there pressure just because of who your dad is?
No, I don't think so. I think if there was ever any pressure, it wasn't from anybody but myself. But I don't think I ever put that pressure on myself just because I knew that once I started doing it, I loved it.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I don't know, it just didn't wasn't really anything I thought of. I'm sure, like, you hear people say it, and you hear people kind of, oh, like, I wonder, he'll just get a job because of his dad, or,
yeah. But
I don't know. Growing up, both me and my brother had that all the time. You make a hockey team, it's because of your dad. You get on the ice, the opposing team chirps at you. Like, it's something that...
So you got thick skin from that from an early age.
Yeah, from
you dealt with that from a kid.
Of course, from day one. Yeah. You know, it's the go-to insult for anyone that doesn't like you. Like, you know, and that's just what they it's easy. It's an easy target. So, you know, at the point I decided to get into it, I was, you know, I did my internship when I was like 18 years old. So at that point I'd heard it all.
Yeah.
So I just kind of buried my head, went about it and kind of enjoyed the ride. And I don't think I ever thought like, oh, I need to be that. And all, like that being like, I'm not him in the sense that he's a newsbreaker. He's an insider. He's so different than the role that I am. I'm more of just a poodle and a talking head, and I'll just put on a nice suit, do my hair and host a game and do the interviews and kind of, I'm more of, he's a journalist.
Yeah.
And I'm a broadcaster. Let's put it that way. I broadcast, I host, I do report, and that's not to take away from that, but he is a journalist. He was a writer. He was an editor-in-chief of the Hockey News. He was a big-time newsbreaker, and he still is. So we're so far on opposite ends of the spectrum that I don't think there's that same pressure where I need to break stories. I need to have his Rolodex. I love what I do, mm-hmm. and it's not what he does. So I think there isn't that kind of pressure.
It's funny. Actually, it's similar with me. My dad, same thing, writer, journalist. Yep. I'm a gas bag. I work hard at it, but in the end, a total gas bag. Before I drink the wine, and I'll tell everyone what it is, and I'll tweet out about, I'm trying to remember, I actually forget the consignment company. This wine I got from a consignment company. It's called Klein. It's a Syrah from Sonoma County. But before we talk more about that, and every now and then you can find this at the LCBO, explain your wine glass, because your wine glass, I appreciate this, could not be more douchey.
It is the douchiest wine glass. I think it's just the right amount of douche. But it's
it's max.
Oh, yeah. I put the pedal down on this one. It was... So for all those wine people, I love Zalto glasses, and they're my favorite. Like, they're... super thin, super light.
Yeah.
I just find if I'm going to drink nice wine, you know, you spend so much money on wine, or why not spend a little bit on a glass?
Yeah.
And it could last you a long, long time. So this one is basically, it's bottomless. It's not stemless because it has a stem. It's basically a burgundy glass mm-hmm. with the base cut off.
It's and just a little ball.
It's just a little ball. So, and then on one side of the bowl, there's kind of a flat section, so so it'd be like if you turn your wine glass on its side, it just kind of sits on a weird angle.
Yeah,
and it's called the Gravitas Omega. If what it looked like wasn't douchey enough, let's just slap that title
on it.
Say that name again. Gravitas Omega or Mega. It might be an S on the end to even add it more, but yeah, it's, if you Google Zalto Gravitas Omega, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about.
Gravitas Omega, that sounds like the name if Michael Bay was gonna come up with a name for a wine glass. Like, that's what it would be.
It sounds like a space, it kind of looks like a space shuttle, but that should be the name of like a space shuttle that has some kind of NASA connection, or it's
fights Megatron or something.
A lot of douchiness put into something that just holds liquid.
Yes.
And I love every minute of it. I'm here for this.
Yeah. Well, it's a happy coincidence. The wine I brought is Syrah. And you know, you were talking before we went starting journalists, but like Syrah. What I appreciate about this wine is the grapes come from an area called Carneros, which is the coldest appellation within like Napa, Sonoma. Yep. So that's where a lot of the higher end sparkling companies source their grapes, because colder climate, more acidity. So the same thing with this. It's not going to be, you know, a big fat New World Syrah. It's not going to be Barossa. And not that there's not a lot of great Barossa wine, though I'm not a huge fan of that area, but it's not even, they make iconic wines. But what I like about it is it's a little bit lighter, a little bit more subtle, But cheers. Thank you for doing this. And, you know, let me know your thoughts on the wine. You can give as much tasting notes as you want, though. That's often. I'll tell you right now, nothing more intimidating. Doesn't matter what level of class. When the first person has to say what they smell and taste, everyone always gets a little sheepish. It's actually quite remarkable.
That's really damn good. Mm. It's perfect. It's perfect for what I drink, because
early 30s, by the way. Not crazy expensive. Actually, it might even be less. It might be between 25 and 30 bucks, which is one thing I liked about it, is that it was good value.
For me, like, I don't get too technical in the wine, but it's a perfect full body wine without that overpowering vanilla, kind of punch you in the face sweetness.
Yeah, just that oak slash whatever designer chemical yeast they're using.
Exactly. And like, so I'm, for me, my wine tastes are a bit strange because I'll tell people I like full body and they say, well, drink this. But I'm like, I like full body in the sense that it doesn't have a lot of American oak or really vanilla-y. So like full body, you know, like Chateau Neuf de Pops and Brunellos and all that.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, you know, this is perfect because it gives you that kind of punch of a full bodied wine, but doesn't have the whole lot of vanilla that some of the American Syrahs or Zinfandels.
Yeah. And a lot do, and a lot it. Because that vanilla, it's not even oak. Sometimes it's just what they do with that chemical yeasts, and just there's different ways of monkeying with the wine in the winery.
Yeah, it's really good.
But you know, you get some of the blueberry, you get some like dark berry, dark raspberry. The pepper is there, like just kind of what you're looking for.
Like yeah, if, it tastes like a really, really good Syrah.
Yeah, and it's a good value. Klein Syrah, Sonoma Coast. But yeah, a lot of the grapes, as I said, come from Carneros. 2016, and I was just trying to see if I could find the name. So I was trying to find the name of the company. I'll put a tweet if people want to buy it, because I got this from a consignment company.
Perfect. Yeah, for me, like, you know, I'm
a couple years ago,
like just a simple. For me, when I know I'm drinking something good, or even, not even good, just something that I like, is if like after one glass, I'm like, okay, I need more. Like, and I'm not kind of like, you know, it's a little heavier. Like, I just want more and more. And then when the bottle runs out, I'm like, shit, I want even more. Like,
and you get, and you know, what's funny. You get bummed out when you see the decanter of the bottle and you see that, oh, there's only enough left for one glass.
Yeah.
And you're like, damn it, son of a.
Yeah, exactly. And like some wines, like, you know, some wines I love. But you have one glass and you're like, I'm good with that.
Yeah.
Like there's some Amarones I've had where I'm like, I'm fine with one glass. I love Amarone, but there's some that
Amarone's
I'm like,
big.
Like, I tap out after one. But there's some wines I've had that it's like, give me more. Like, I think the best bottle I've ever had that was like that was a Ridge Montebello. Mm-hmm. Where like I had one sip and I'm like, I didn't know California Cab could taste anything like this. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And it was drinking way too young. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it wasn't decanted long enough, but it was still so damn good.
It happens all the time. We're bad at drinking wine too young because you see it and you just want to drink it.
I went through about a 6 month phase where I used to have a wine fridge, and the people listening can't see it, but it was used to sit right here next to the bar cart, and it was big, it was ugly, and it took up a huge amount of room.
Yeah, that's a lot of wine fridges.
Every time this isn't a big condo, so I can't get a built-in one. I can't put a standing one somewhere hidden away.
Yeah.
So it was out in the open. And every time I would go on the road, it was almost like a 2 year stretch where I would take, like I said, my per diem.
Yeah.
And I'd go to Total Wine and buy one bottle from $75 to $150.
Yeah.
And I'd eat Starbucks that day and that's it. Just, you know, breakfast sandwich and a coffee, and you get so busy. So I say I lot this amount
of money.
It's
a great sacrifice. I would have done the same thing.
And so I was buying some really, really cool stuff. And so I had about 30, 35 bottles in this fridge. And like I had the sheet put over so the sun didn't go on it. I had the humidity gauge in there. I was going all out. And then it started just making a whole lot of noise.
Yeah.
And we got a dog and it was kind of waking the dog up randomly at night. So I thought, you know what? I was going to put it in storage. I know right along King West here, there's a place I don't know. I don't have patience. So I started looking at these bottles and thought, I've had them for about a year and a half and thought, let's drink them. Mm-hmm. And so I took my whole collection, which very, very modest compared to what I'm sure a lot of the listeners and some of the wine people have. But for me, it was like my collection of wine. And over the course of 6 months, anytime I wanted, I just grabbed a bottle out of there. And there was some real, like, you know,
some good stuff. There'd be some good stuff in there.
Yeah, like, and it was all way too young.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It was all way too young, but I just thought, what the hell? Like, there was, I think the coolest bottle I had was a 2010 or 2009 or 2010 Chateau Croix de Labrie, mm-hmm. the kind of the garage wine from, I think, Saint-Emilion or the right bank.
Yeah, they're big into that. Yeah.
That was, and I just liked that one because I think there was only like 1,000 bottles made or something like that. But it was a fun 6 months because every time I'd go visit my dad, I'd bring something for him to try, and there was some cool French and Italian stuff in there.
You're a good son. As we end this, Sean, will William Nylander get signed by the time this podcast is posted?
No.
Damn it.
No, I'm sorry.
Thank you, my friend.
I have no real inside knowledge, but that's the safe, easy bet. Sorry.
I feel sorry for your dad. He's got to answer that
there's
question.
There's lots of wine left for you to
That's true.
Drown your sorrows.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.